Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the stupendous Sam Groton, the dapper Daniel Markwick, and the judicious James Malloy. Today, we have myself, Ange, and Jen Adcock, one of our newest gnomes! Yay! We're going to skip our Get to Know a Gnome question today, though, because the whole episode is going to be about getting to know Jen. So, Jen, welcome to the stew!
Thanks, Ange. It's so good to be here.
The question I want to start with is, what is your gamer origin story? How did you get into gaming?
So, I was probably about 12 years old. And my older brother, Bill Adcock, he's about 6 years older than me, and he'd gotten into gaming at college, and he wanted to practice DMing, so I think I initially started off as a test subject more than anything else.
You were the guinea pig.
I was the guinea pig. But that really worked out. He'd gotten me into, like, webcomics and all this stuff, so I was reading Order of the Stick. So,
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so we were playing D&D, and my first character was a huge ripoff of Haley Starshine, because, you know, of course, why not?
Why not?
And then from there, it was just sort of a spiral. And when he moved out, he left behind a bunch of his gaming stuff that I then promptly stole. So there it is.
I think that's the general rule when older siblings go off to college. If their things are left unattended for too long, you can claim ownership.
Yep, that's how I got, like, all of my first dice, my first Savage Worlds rule books, you know?
So how long into, what made you switch from playing to running?
I think it was kind of the classic thing for a lot of DMs where it's, oh, no one else wants to DM, and if there's no DM, we don't get to have a game, so here I go. I started actually not with D&D, because I was in, this was before 4th or 5th edition, and I was intimidated by 3.5.
3.5 was a little weighty.
Yeah, so as a first-time DM, I was kind of intimidated by that, so I actually started with Savage Worlds, and I got a lot of the rules wrong, but, you know, we still made a game work, it was fine. And that was with some friends in high school, and I ran a Buffy the Vampire Slayer-themed game.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And I think that it's pretty standard for new GMs to just get all the rules wrong.
Yeah, like,
and
I didn't...
that's okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, I had found those original notes from that game I'd run in high school. I found that a couple years ago and ran them at one of our local Savage Worlds days. And that was actually, it was still a pretty solid adventure.
And hey, you know the rules a lot better now.
Yes, for sure.
So, obviously you've mentioned Savage Worlds and D&D. Mm-hmm. What type of games do you like to play, to run? Is there a difference between the two?
I think I tend to like to run and play the same types of things, although I know where my strong suits and weak suits are as a GM and as a player. I like games about feelings. I tend to be really bored by combat nowadays, and I'm really just, all right, let's get to the juicy drama. Let's get to all of the feels. I love playing in horror games, like Call of Cthulhu and things like that, but I'm terrible at running them. Just awful. I cannot, like, do that spooky atmosphere to save my life. So I tend to err more on sort of, like, the whimsical side. I like whimsy, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of actually the opposite of you on the horror games. I generally don't like playing them,
mm-hmm.
but I'm okay. Like, My friend TJ, who's one of my regulars in my games, he often says that all games end up being Cthulhu games. And I introduce a lot of horror elements into my games. Mm-hmm. I'm really good at running Monster of the Week that has that horror element.
Yeah.
I'm just not necessarily good at playing horror games. So I'm like the exact opposite of you there.
It's funny.
You've actually been doing a lot with the DMs Guild.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the stuff you've been creating and designing?
Sure, yeah. So I started on the DMs Guild, I don't know, maybe a good year after it first debuted. And I had found, while I was running Adventurers League at my local game store, there were a couple of kids who'd come, like their parents had come to join us for game, and then they'd brought their kids along and the kids wanted to play too. And it was then that I sort of started to realize how not good some of the published material is for kids.
Yeah.
either in terms of like complexity and intrigue or in terms of like actual inappropriate content for kids. And I realized looking through the DM's Guild that there was kind of a niche to be filled there. I decided, I was like, well, if there's no one doing this, I guess I'll do this. So I started off writing D&D Adventures for Kids, which is a ton of fun. Kids are so creative as gamers and as players.
Oh, yeah.
They always take it in a direction you don't expect, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so then I started falling into some of the Facebook groups with the other DMs Guild creators, and there are a lot more of us now than when I started. I think the biggest Facebook group for the DMs Guild creators circle is almost at 1,000 members now.
Ooh,
so yeah, wow. And I'm sure there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds who are not in the Facebook groups at all. But yeah, so it's a really good forum for just feedback and getting, you know, hey, how has everyone's experience been with publishing this way and things like that? So there's a big culture of collaboration there.
What type of feedback have you gotten on like your published material, especially the stuff published for, aimed at kids?
I've been really lucky. The first review I ever got on one of these, the guy who he ran it for his two sons. And he actually included some pictures of him and his family all playing the game together. And I was like, oh, it
That's
warms
awesome.
My heart, which was just great. They had been playing a Smurfs-themed campaign, and they ran my little fairy-themed adventure to sort of tie in with that. The thing about running for kids, I think, is that they're so much more unpredictable than adults, especially mm-hmm. adults who've been gaming for a long time, who sort of have, maybe not routines is the right word, but, you know, we sort of have our ideas about how things should go. Whereas kids, they will take things off the wall any way that you don't expect, they'll do that. So trying
to, Absolutely. Yeah,
so trying to account for every possibility in the written adventure just isn't going to work. You can't do it. So you just sort of take things in a couple of general ideas. Well, if they try to fight with it, let's do this. And if they try to talk to it, let's do this. And adapt. Adapt as needed.
Yeah, because I've been having this issue with some published adventures where they expect you to do X, Y, and Z, but mm-hmm. my players are going to do J, D, and F.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, you kind of have to quickly adapt to what they're doing. And with kids, it's even more chaotic and unpredictable. You can't assume they're going to do a specific thing because they're going to think in different ways and mm-hmm. you know, figure out different ways to get around the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
I ran into also the fact that kids don't necessarily know the tropes
yes,
of gaming.
Absolutely.
Like, they immediately wanted to split the party to more quickly explore these goblin caverns. And I'm like, guys, let's pause a moment and let's talk
yeah.
about this.
For a while, when I was running the Curse of Strahd hardback adventure from D&D, one of my players was a 12-year-old boy, and he decided to use his downtime to invent the bicycle. Because they're like, we could get around so much faster if we had bikes! And he managed to successfully invent the bicycle, and he comes across like a roving band of bandits and thieves, and he manages to impress them into becoming his minions. And that is how he invented the biker gang in Barovia. It was so good. That was such a good moment because I didn't know what he was building towards, but we're like, okay, let's roll with this. We'll see what happens. And then it was just so good, the payoff on that.
That is awesome. You have a Patreon.
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit about your Patreon.
So I recently sort of revamped things. So right now, I am working on a collection of sort of mini storytelling RPGs that I'm hoping to kickstart this upcoming year. And on Patreon, I'm sort of going through the process of the initial drafts of those games, the playtests, how the games evolve over time, things like that, as well as my actual plans for the Kickstarter. And we actually just hit the goal that I'd set where I'm going to start my own podcast as well. So that's going to be Ooh. Super fun. Yeah, I'm going to be talking a lot about some of the indie games that we get to play with some of my usual groups, things like that.
Yeah, I get to see, I know you play a lot with Jerry,
yeah, yep.
GM Gerrymander, and I get to see a lot of the table selfies yep. from those games.
Yeah, that's our Friday night group, and it's just a blast.
What other projects do you have in the works? Like, you mentioned the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
When is that going to drop?
That is, I'm hoping for this summer, fingers crossed, that's not too sort of unrealistic or speedy for the launch on that, but I'm hoping for this summer. So that's actually something I started working on during NaNoWriMo, of all things, National Novel Writing Month, when I was supposed to be working on my novel and didn't. So that is...
I'm guessing you didn't hit the goal
no,
for the novel?
Not this year.
What is it you love about role-playing games?
Yeah, so for me, the story is the big thing. And I think that's part of why I tend to be bored by combat in a lot of games, because it's like, okay, are we really advancing the story? Are we really, you know, telling information about our characters, things like that?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, story is always the main thing. And the more dramatic that story, the better. I do love the drama. That's why I really loved Monster Hearts the first time I played that.
Oh,
that
was, yeah.
All the teen drama.
Monster Hearts is great.
Mm-hmm.
So you tend to run a lot at cons.
I do.
So... What gaming conventions are you thinking you're going to make this year?
All right, so this year I have 5 on the docket for, like, official, I'm going, it's going to happen. Running Gag in Geneseo, which is just next month. Always a favorite.
It's an excellent small con.
Yeah, it's a college con, one of the best college cons, in my opinion. Breakout in Toronto in March.
Love Another Breakout. Awesome con.
Yeah. Queen City Conquest right here in Buffalo in July. They moved it from September to July this year, so that's new, so that's fun. Con on the Cob in October is still sort of iffy with the time off, but I'm hoping I can make that one. And then Metatopia in November.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really excited.
Now, are you planning it running yourself into the ground, or are you going to... moderate yourself a little bit.
I am trying to moderate myself better at conventions. No more QCC 2017 where I ran 7 game slots in 7 different systems. That was a little killer.
I think I saw you at the end of that con and you were just, you kind of had this so fried expression. Like somebody was talking to you about possibly going to get food and you're like, I'm going home.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I remember that. I was just so fried. Yeah. So at Running Gag, I'm running 4 games, but they're only 2 systems. So it's 2 duplicates. So it's a step in the right direction.
As soon as they open registration, I'm going to try and get into one of those games.
Awesome. Yes.
So, what type of articles can the Stu audience expect to see from you?
Ah, yeah. So, I'm looking to do a lot of stuff on that sort of story note, sort of improving the story of your games. This is something I talked about with John, where doing sort of an idea of, all right, if your story includes X, Y, and Z elements, here are some different directions you can take that based on the preferences of your players, on how you want to drive that story, things like that. It's not quite so much, all right, we do X and then we do Y and then we do Z and then we're done. But, you know, linking things together.
Right. Because your players are never going to do things exactly the way you expect them to.
Never. Never. Nuh-uh. No, if you make a plan, that plan will be derailed. It's like a law.
It is absolutely a law. I think I said recently, I don't remember if it was in an episode of the Gnomecast or one of my articles, but I never want to equate the players to being your enemy, but yeah. that statement of no plan survives contact with the enemy is so true when it comes to gaming, because it really doesn't matter how well you've planned, it's like the players are going to take it in a whole new direction.
They sure will.
So before we start wrapping things up, what are the games you are going to be running at? You already have stuff on schedule for Running Gag.
Yeah.
And do you have stuff on schedule for Breakout Con?
I do have stuff on the schedule for Breakout. I cannot for the life of me remember what I put on the schedule for Breakout, because that was 2 whole months ago now. So what are you running at Gag? So I have Costume Fairy Adventures, Swan Lark. That's a module that I wrote for this very cute game. It's all about mischief and fun and pranks and costumes. Because obviously when a fairy puts on a costume, they gain the powers of that costume. It's a ton of fun. And so that one involves the fairies invading a youth ballet production of Swan Lake. and all the chaos that ensues. And then I'm running 2 sessions of a Rob Zombie-inspired Savage Worlds called Planet Motherfucker. So I'm going for the cognitive dissonance side of things.
I'm like, you're like at both, like, extremes.
Yeah.
Hopefully people don't confuse one game for the other.
Oh, yeah, no. We will have to disabuse them of that notion, because that is no. Yeah, if anyone tries to bring their kids to the Rob Zombie one, I am throwing the kids out. No kids.
Yeah. So anything else you want to say to our listeners before we start wrapping up and getting out of here?
Gee, I don't know. Thanks for listening, folks, over at The Gnome Stew, because you guys are really great. It's a great community you've got over there.
Yeah.
But we've got over here now.
Yeah, we've got some good folks. So, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by 72-Hour Energy Drink, made for GMs that just want to run all the things and sign up to run 9 sessions for a 3-day con. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
Bonus experience. Ray and Monica are two old friends exploring gameplay and design through the lens of diversity, while also sharing some of the dumbest humor gaming has to offer. They said that, not me. That's not my words.
and I can attest to it. They're I like them. I like them a lot. They're definitely worth listening to. You can find us at gnomestew.com, at gnomestew on Twitter, and gnomestew on Facebook. Jen, where else can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, so I have my Twitter over at JenCatWrites. I never shut up. I'm just tweeting constantly. I have my blog over at firstsightsecondthoughts.net, and my Patreon, patreon.com/JenCatWrites. And they all link to each other, so if you find one, you'll find the rest.
Excellent. So, do you think we avoided the stew this week? I mean, it would be kind of rude for John to toss you into the stew when you're still so new, but what do you think?
Fingers crossed. Knock on wood. No stew this week.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
My brain froze.